Wolves Cast, audio on demand.
Welcome into another episode of Wolves Cast Audio on Demand. John Fokey alongside Cal Soderquist. Don't forget to check us out via your Alexa unit. Just say, hey, Alexa, play podcast Wolves Cast, and you get it right there on demand, whether on your Echo unit, your Dot unit, whatever your on-demand listening device is. We're also on Stitcher, iTunes, SoundCloud, and, of course, Timberwolves.com. Coming up on this episode, going to take a trip down March Madness memory lane with Cole Aldrich. He and his Kansas squad winning a national championship in dramatic fashion over the Memphis Tigers, featuring Derrick Rose. So we'll have that story coming up for you in our middle segment. We'll also take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But Cal, before we get to all of that, let's start with the playoff push for Minnesota. Tough weekend for the Wolves. They fall at San Antonio. Spirited comeback against the Rockets on Sunday, but they were down by 25, got to within five before they fell short. And that game on Sunday, not only did Minnesota lose, but you had OKC win. You had New Orleans win. You had Utah win. You had Portland win. And so all these teams that Minnesota's jockeying with, they all won. Minnesota lost. Suddenly the Wolves are down to eighth in the standings. Well, things flipped a little bit on Tuesday as the Wolves picked up a big win over the LA Clippers. OKC lost at Boston. We saw Utah lose. Their 9-game winning streak came to an end, and the Blazers' 13-game winning streak came to an end. So Minnesota climbing briefly into the 7th spot in the Western Conference. But this playoff push right now, it is something to see. I mean, I don't remember a year where all these teams were so close and every night things could change so drastically, but they changed for the better for Minnesota last night.
Yeah, and what fun it is, too, for the young Timberwolves. We heard Tom Thibodeau mention guys like Karl Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins maturing, and they're making this push for a playoff appearance. Obviously, it'd be the first of their career. They're getting playoff experience right now in some of these games, including against teams like the Clippers, where these teams you're playing also have that do-or-die urgency. So valuable stuff for the young Wolves, and even for guys like Taj Gibson and Jamal Crawford, just to get used to having that intensity from their teammates, like we've heard Taj mention. So fun one on Tuesday at the Target Center, and I think it was a good one for the momentum and sort of the confidence for the Timberwolves, as now the schedule lightens up a little bit. You don't want to let off the gas, but they can continue to carry that.
Well, Taj Gibson talked about not letting off the gas before shoot-around yesterday, and I just really liked what he said about how intense this postseason race is going to be. Let's take a listen.
I tell them to go out there and burn yourself out, really, because when you're watching the game at home in the summer, you're going to have a lot of regrets. Try not to have any regrets. Go out there and play your heel up in the summer. Because these are the games you're going to look back on, and what if I would have did this, what if I would have done that. Try not to have any regrets. That's the main thing I try to tell the guys, is go out there and play, because playoff time, you just got to go lay it on the line. There's no tomorrow.
All right, so there you go. Taj Gibson saying, hey, burn yourself out, recover, rest, no regrets in the summertime, but right now you've got to go all in. And I feel like Minnesota did that against the LA Clippers, Cal. When you take a look at, you know, some of the numbers that were put up, 4 over the 20-point mark again for Minnesota, second straight game the Wolves have had that type of a balanced scoring attack. And according to the Elias Sports Bureau, the last quartet of teammates to score 20 or more in consecutive games was the LA Lakers back in 1998, Shaq, Kobe, Rick Fox, and Eddie Jones. And think for a moment how amazing that is, right? With some of the super teams that we have seen put together, the last time a quartet of teammates scored 20 or more points in back-to-back games, you got to go all the way back to 1998. Minnesota has now done it in back-to-back games. So that was impressive, that balanced attack, and really the sense of urgency and desperation Minnesota played with, I thought, was incredibly impressive.
I always knew we'd be talking about Rick Fox on this podcast.
Eddie Jones, how about the Temple product?
Absolutely. And you mentioned the intensity, too, and I think we saw it in that win against the Clippers, whether it was Andrew Wiggins kind of chasing Austin Rivers into the backcourt for a loose ball, and just some of the other hustle plays, or even, you know, the frustration at times with some calls. And obviously those have boiled over in the last few weeks, but that I think is just a product of what the stretch run has meant for this team, and how really they look at every single game as sort of a must win. And really they live possession to possession on some of these things. And you can understand that they're that dialed in.
Loved Minnesota's defensive effort against the Clippers. 43% shooting, 8 of 24 from deep. Forced them into 12 turnovers, scored 11 points off those. And then we mentioned the balanced attack. 30, 10, and 3 for Karl-Anthony Towns. Andrew Wiggins, 27 points, 3 rebounds, 0 assists. And you might say, well, you know, okay, that's a fine Wiggins night. But Coach Tibbs described him as awesome. I don't remember Coach ever using the word awesome to describe anything, not even like his cup of coffee. So that was, you know, that's high, high praise. And, you know, Wiggins did end up tying his career high with 3 blocks, that hustle play that you mentioned. And what I loved about that play, chasing Austin Rivers all over the place, was how into it the crowd got.
Yeah.
And I have to say, the Timberwolves crowds these past couple of weeks, not only have they been big all season, but they've been very savvy in knowing and appreciating the effort. And you can go back to Sunday, whether it was Gorgie shoving Chris Paul or Gorgie sliding over and taking the charge. Remember, Gorgie took the charge, and that's when the crowd started chanting his name. So they're into it. They understand what's important. And Andrew, even though Minnesota didn't get that ball back and it didn't necessarily go down as a steal, you know, in the stats, the crowd knew how important that was and how much they appreciated it. And so I give, you know, a lot of credit to Minnesota's crowd for being so dialed into these games and understanding the importance of some of these plays. And Jeff Teague, 20 points, 12 assists. I thought in the second half he controlled things and really dominated that second half, either looking for his own shot, putting pressure on the defense, forcing them to collapse, kicking into the corners. You know, Andrew Wiggins was 4 of 5 from beyond the arc. And then Jamal Crawford with the 20 points as he celebrated 38 years young, as he told me on the postgame show. But loved the balanced attack, loved the defensive effort and the intensity in that ball game. And like you brought up a moment ago, you've got to carry that now into New York. You've got to carry that into Philly. Looking ahead to next week, Memphis, Atlanta, and Dallas, those are teams that are struggling. And for Minnesota to string together some wins, and, you know, Utah, you knew Utah wasn't going to win out. You knew Portland wasn't going to win out. OKC wasn't going to win out. So those teams, you know, they've lost. Maybe they stumble a little bit more. You've got opportunities in front of you. Good chance for Minnesota, if they can string some wins together, start to climb in the Western Conference standings. And then, you know, you start looking back to the tiebreakers that you've got in your back pocket, that you win some games, you end up with the same record. Maybe you jump up a spot because of the early season success that Minnesota had against the Thunder and against the Pelicans, and then an opportunity on April 1st to win that season series with the Utah Jazz. So I am looking forward to this stretch of basketball, and I almost feel like this stretch is as, if not more important than that stretch that we just went through of 8 games against teams above 500.
Yeah, it's make or break. And I think it was Jamal Crawford who, after that win over the Wizards, kind of mentioned, you know, if we didn't win tonight, that win on Sunday a couple days earlier against the Warriors was all for nothing. And you can think about it the same way as you enter this, you know, perceivably easier stretch, quote unquote. But it's all for nothing, the fact that you kept your head above water against these teams. You got that Warriors win. You got that Wizards win. You went through this brutal stretch of elite opponents just to give yourself that opportunity to now close it out and take care of business, whereas a team like the Clippers, they've now dropped 4 straight, I think. The Nuggets have a brutal stretch of consecutive road games. The road trip is monstrous. So now it turns for the Timberwolves, but all that means is they have an opportunity. And they've got to take advantage of it. Obviously, they've struggled at times on the road against some of these bottom teams, whether it's the Nets or the Hawks. So it still is by no means a gimme, but I think that they know, they realize what's in front of them. It's theirs to kind of take at this point, and I'm very excited to see how they respond.
Well, Minnesota with the win last night, they secure a winning record for the first time since the 04-05 season. So it has been a while, and you think back to, you know, during my stretch here, starting in the 2007-2008 season, there was one year where they had an opportunity to do that. It was under Rick Adelman, and I want to say it was Kevin Love's last year in a Timberwolves uniform, and Minnesota dropped the season finale to the Utah Jazz. The game was in multiple overtimes, and Minnesota ended up 40-42, and so that was the last time Wolves were even close to sniffing 500, and with 10 games to go, they've already secured at least a winning record. Jimmy Butler still not back and, you know, working his way back from that knee injury. I think the good news is Jimmy's now with the team. He's continuing his rehab here in the Twin Cities, and he'll be with the team on the road, you know, around the guys, and Still no timetable as far as when he's going to be back, but if you check out our SoundCloud page, soundcloud.com/wolves-radio, we've got his full media availability up there. Obviously, you could hear it in Jimmy's voice, Cal. He wants to be back. He wants to be out there right now. Sort of suited up for Sunday's game against the Houston Rockets. He actually had his jersey on underneath his t-shirt, underneath his sports coat. So just in case they needed him, he had some sweatpants and sneakers on. He probably would have loved to get the call from Tibbs to go in, but you can tell how much he wants to be out there, but no timetable right now. And I liked what Tibbs said yesterday before shoot around or after shoot around that, you know, hey, we've got to go to battle with the guys that are healthy and suited up right now. You can't think or wait around for Jimmy to come back. You've got to go right now. And then when Jimmy gets back, the confidence that Andrew has, that Jeff Teague has and is playing with, that, you know, Karl Anthony Towns, all these guys stepping up in big moments, they're playing with a lot of confidence. And then you add Jimmy Butler to that mix once he gets healthy. I think that could help Minnesota take another step and, you know, really raise the level of play heading into a very important time, whether it's the end of the regular season, whether it's the postseason, whenever he does return.
Yeah, that's the silver lining, I think, from all this, that this development or progression almost couldn't have been possible if Jimmy had stayed healthy, obviously, because the opportunity maybe just wouldn't have been there for those guys. And I think both for Jimmy and for the fans of this team, it was great to see that optimism in his voice. He seemed very positive and upbeat about how the rehab process had gone, where he is, and obviously, like you said, still no timetable, but it was great to see him encouraged and positive. At the same time, it was great to hear Tom Thibodeau sort of echo for the team that they can't just be waiting and have one eye on Jimmy as he continues to recover. They've got to continue moving along, at least temporarily, without him, and that does have to be their mindset. But I just came away from that little sort of media huddle with Jimmy very encouraged about how he seemed to be carrying all that stuff.
As Tibbs always says, we've got enough to win, and Minnesota had enough to win last night. A nice one over the L.A. Clippers. Try to continue that into a back-to-back out on the East Coast. Friday against the New York Knicks, a 6:30 tip-off at Madison Square Garden, and then Saturday at Philadelphia, 5 o'clock tip-off. So challenging back-to-back, although the travel not nearly as extensive as we saw last weekend when Minnesota had a back-to-back in San Antonio and then home to the Houston Rockets. All right, keep it right here. Still to come, we've got our three in the key segment. We'll take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But right now, we're in the midst of the NCAA's March Madness, and Cole Aldrich going to take us down a March Madness memory lane right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Minnesota, lock in your seats now because we've got must-see action at Target Center on March 26th. The Timberwolves are going head-to-head with Marc Gasol and the Memphis Grizzlies. Be there to see Wiggs, Cat, and the Pack light it up as they put on a show in front of the livest crowd around. Visit Timberwolves.com to get your tickets now. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north. The Timberwolves are presented by U.S. Bank.
Wolvescast Audio on Demand continues. John Fokey with you here. Cal Soderquist will rejoin me in a few moments as we go three in the key, taking a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. But first, we're in the midst of the NCAA tournament and March Madness, and there's a couple of guys on this Timberwolves team who have seen some success in that tournament. Tyus Jones won the 2015 title with Duke. Gorgui Dieng in Louisville won the 2013 title. And Cole Aldrich's Kansas Jayhawks beat Derrick Rose's Memphis Tigers back in 2008 for the championship. And I recently sat down with Cole as he remembered that run and his time in a Jayhawks uniform. That national championship run, I mean, I went back and watched the YouTube highlights of it again this morning. Mario Chalmers hits the three in the Final Four against the school that you were looking at in Carolina. You came up really big. I'm sure the fans loved, Carolina fans loved to see that. They lose you to Kansas, and you help beat them in the Final Four. I mean, those two games and really that tournament as a whole, just how special and fun was that for you as a freshman?
You know, when you're a freshman, you don't really understand the magnitude of it. You know, I played all 40 games my freshman year, and you know, that Final Four game was a huge one for me. And you know, we got a few guys into foul trouble, and you know, Coach Self kind of threw me in there and was probably just looked at the other assistants and were like, boy, let's cross our fingers today. You know, it could be really good or it could be really bad. We just need to get them, you know, get them through the half. And, you know, I went out there and played really well and, you know, was able to help our team win. And, you know, looking back at it, you don't quite understand it as a freshman just going out there and being on that stage. I mean, it's a huge stage, and those memories I'm never going to forget.
And then you move on to the national championship game, and you're down by three at the end of regulation, and Mario Chalmers is running around out on the perimeter and fires up that shot. Were you in that situation where you're like, oh, no, this is not going to go our way? Were you confident that you guys would find a way to force overtime? What was kind of running through the mind there?
It's tough because I think we were down 9 with a minute 51 or 56 on the clock. And I remember looking to another guy on our bench, Jeremy Case, and I was like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. You know, we hit a few big shots. They missed a few free throws. Sharon got a huge steal. And then ultimately, you know, Mario hit the top of the key jumper for the tie and to send it into overtime. And it's just like the emotion of being so down and then being so up, and you know, it's incredible.
Oh, well, it was one of the best national championship games, at least in recent memory. And you went on to a couple more years at Kansas before leaving after your junior year. And one of those years, you posted the first official triple-double in Kansas history. And you joined Shaq as only the second guy to do so, a triple-double with blocks. I mean, there have been some great, great players that come out of Kansas. Pretty awesome to see your name there in the record book.
Oh, it was incredible. I was back here at the old Metrodome, and it was the second round against Dayton. And, you know, I had a number of blocks, and you weren't thinking about it during the game. And then, you know, I got my 10th block, and I kind of came back to the bench towards the end of the game. And, you know, we were up a decent amount, and guys were like, you got it. And I'm kind of, What do you mean I got it? Like, yeah, we're going to win this game. It's great. I know that. And then, you know, then it kind of set in. And, you know, me being home, being in the Metrodome in front of family and friends in the tournament, just kind of willing our way to win the game.
That's pretty wild. 55-0 at Allen Fieldhouse during the course of your college career. You've talked before about what a special place it is to play, but even more special knowing that you never suffered an L there.
I mean, we've had a few really, really close ones. Arizona came in my freshman year and brought us into overtime. And, you know, those games, you kind of find a way just to grit out a win. And that building is special. If you've never been in that building, it's a must-do because, you know, once they start kind of chanting at the end of the game, rock, I mean, you just have these goosebumps. And it just floods your body, and the fans are incredible.
And I imagine it's like that for every single game, not just conference games or rival games. It's like that for every game.
Oh, we could be playing, you know, a preseason exhibition game against Washburn, who's a Division II school, and it'll be sold out every night. It doesn't matter. Those people will be coming there.
The decision to leave after your junior year, was it a tough one? Because it sounds like you really enjoyed your experience there as a member of the Jayhawks.
I loved it. I had an opportunity to leave after my sophomore year. You know, I kind of sat down with our academic advisor and my parents and coach. And, you know, my ultimate goal was, you know, obviously to play in the NBA, but also, you know, finish school. And nobody in my immediate family had graduated college, so to me that was a big deal, and I wanted to put myself in the best position that when I left, I was able to go back and finish. So I stayed another year and had a really good year. We were number one seed overall and ultimately lost to Northern Iowa in the tournament. But, you know, that year was, even though it was my junior year, it was kind of my senior year. You know, Sharon Collins was the other guy that was, you know, our main point guard, and it was his senior year, but we kind of enjoyed it together.
Well, Cole's Kansas squad, one of two remaining one seeds left in the tournament, and they're in the Sweet 16 facing off with fifth-seeded Clemson for an Elite Eight berth coming up on Friday. Keep it right here. Cal Soderquist is back next. We go three in the key right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.
Suit up like the Pack in the newly renovated team store located on the Skyway level of Target Center. Shop the newest in Timberwolves apparel, including jerseys, on-court gear, hats, and more. Visit TimberwolvesTeamStore.com or stop by the team store at Target Center today. Minnesota Timberwolves, all eyes north.
Welcome back. WolvesCast Audio on Demand. Cal Soderquist rejoins me here as we go three in the key. Take a look at the top three storylines this week in the NBA. And Cal, I think first and foremost, you know, top of mind, Cleveland Cavaliers coach Ty Lue stepping away, not stepping away as in he's not coaching anymore, but stepping aside for a week or possibly more to address some health issues that he's been going through. He made the announcement on Monday, missed that first game Tuesday against the Milwaukee Bucks, or actually it was Monday night against the Milwaukee Bucks. He missed that game. The Cavs came away with the win. LeBron with a 40-point triple-double. Kevin Love back in the lineup for the Cavs. He had 18 points in 25 minutes, but here's LeBron James on his head coach Ty Lue stepping away.
It's like losing one of your best players, obviously. You know, a guy that's the, you know, pretty much, you know, the captain of our ship, and you know, has run the thing for the last 3 years. But you know, everyone has to step up. You know, and we have you know, coaches in place that's ready for that challenge, and we have to do our job as players as well. But you know, like I said, it's health is most important. And
so we've seen this before, unfortunately. In fact, we've seen it once already this year. Steve Clifford, who was dealing with basically crippling headaches, had to step away for about 4 to 5 weeks as the head coach of the Charlotte Hornets. He was able to address his symptoms, and a lot of them came from lack of sleep. And, you know, Doc Rivers was in town earlier this week. He talked about when he had to step aside, I believe it was last season, for some health issues. And obviously Ty Lue now having to step away for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Coach Tibbs has talked about it. The guys have talked about it. It's a stressful job, and I think when you're coaching LeBron James and the expectations that come along with that, and you know the win now mindset of the Cleveland Cavaliers trying to take advantage of every game, every year that LeBron is in his prime, that is a lot for anyone to handle. And you know, you hate to see somebody going through something like this, but I think, you know, good for Ty Lue to say, hey, there are more important things than winning basketball games. And when you're dealing with chest pains and you're coughing up blood and all the other things that he's gone through, it is incredibly important to address those things and try to get yourself right.
Yeah, that's not a can you want to kick down the road. And I think it's important both for he and Steve Clifford earlier to really not succumb to that pressure of the job. And I think Doc Rivers at Shootaround Tuesday at the Target Center spoke very honestly about how tough that is to really be the head coach and to form all these relationships with these players. You look at them like family. Even for Doc, one of them is actually family. But a lot of these coaches, it's no different with their players, and they feel that responsibility to put in those long hours. And maybe not every coach has the intensity of Tom Thibodeau on the sideline during the 48 minutes of game action, but they all put in the long hours in the film room or sleepless nights just thinking of ways to find that minuscule advantage against an opponent. And it really takes a toll. And these coaches definitely overlook sometimes or don't prioritize their health and their well-being. And it's a really tough deal. And Doc just kind of spoke about how there aren't a lot of people around you who are going to force you to make those decisions to put yourself first, because you've got a lot of staff members who, you know, you're the boss of, and they're hesitant to maybe step out of line and tell you what to do. And it's got to be on the coaches sometimes. And I think it's important that a lot of these guys kind of in this community or in this brotherhood have started to do this. And hopefully it will make it less of a stigma, more of a regular thing for them to prioritize their health, because they all want to see each other out there, obviously, as long as possible and as healthy as possible.
It's really interesting to me the way we put such an onus and focus on player health, and yet we haven't really kind of translated that over to coach health. You know, the coaches are traveling just as much as the players are, and, you know, in the afternoon, When the players are taking naps, the coaches are watching film. And in the mornings, when the players are sleeping in and coming to shoot around, the coaches are already there formulating a plan for shoot around. And, you know, I just know from my experience in traveling with the Minnesota Lynx and, you know, Jim Peterson, current Wolves TV analyst, former assistant coach with the Minnesota Lynx, every once in a while there'd be like a logjam where he would have two or three scouts in a row. And it was like you're up super early. You'd see him downstairs, cup of coffee, working on his film. Then he'd go to shoot around. Then he'd spend all afternoon, you know, putting together a scouting report, not for that night's opponent because he'd already done that, but for the next game. And after the game, you know, heading straight back to the hotel, sometimes working all night to try and make sure that you're up to speed because you've got a flight back, and then you've got to turn around and practice that next day and start preparing. And that's on the WNBA side where they play 34 games, not the NBA side where they play 82. And so, you know, I think it's good that it's being brought up, and I hope that it's something that, you know, whether it's the league, whether it's individual teams and, you know, training staffs and so on, but let's make this a focus because coaches' health is as, if not more important, you know, I guess not more important, but everybody's health is incredibly important, but it is as important as the player's health. And the other thing to kind of think about is, you know, these players are in incredible physical condition and they're young. The coaches, a lot of them are, you know, maybe double the age, if not more, than some of their players. And when you're not sleeping and when you're not, you know, getting the right nutrition and all those sorts of things, it does take its toll. And so I'm glad that these coaches have kind of, you know, put aside the machismo of, you know, I got to grind through this, I'm tougher than this, and said, hey, we need to address this health. And so I hope that, you know, whether it's during the off season, whatever it is, all coaches kind of step back a little bit and say, how can I prioritize my health while still doing all these other things to be a great coach and to help my team? And I thought that Zach Lowe podcast that you and I listened to yesterday where he had Steve Clifford on, and Cliff kind of talked about, you know, his journey to becoming an NBA coach and the staffs that he worked on and the things that he learned, and then, you know, going through his health scare and sort of the changes that he's made, not only to his life, but to the lives of his assistant coaches to help them try and find more balance. It was a really interesting podcast and really interesting take on it all from somebody who has gone through it. And so I would highly encourage you to take a listen to that. But I really do think the coach's health is as important as a player health. And I hope that, you know, all these guys are able to prioritize their health in the same way. So Ty Lue out at least a week as head coach of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's move to topic number two. Vince Carter earlier this week moving into 22nd on the all-time scoring list. He threw down a big dunk in the Kings' win over the Detroit Pistons. And in the process, poked a little fun at Blake Griffin. If you haven't seen the video, it's pretty funny. Blake complaining about a call and Vince Carter right there mimicking him along the way. But so he was having some fun, and obviously with the way Sacramento's season has gone, struggling throughout the year to string together wins, Carter having a little fun there. But I want to bring up Vince Carter because the guy is still playing basketball. And he's still, I don't know, playing at a high level, but he's effective when he's out there. You know, he's not going to give you the high-flying dunks each and every play like he did when he was younger. But fact of the matter is the guy's still out there and he's still contributing. So my question to you is, what will Vince Carter's legacy be? I feel like he's gone through kind of a couple different phases in his career. And, you know, again, he's still hanging around and he's still contributing. So at the end of the day, whenever VC decides to hang it up, what do you think his legacy will be?
Well, I think part of the legacy can certainly be longevity. The fact that he's hung around this long, and you mentioned maybe not as effective as he once was, but I think still very impactful. You know, we're not around the Kings every day, but I've heard some things, and we know some people with that organization that say Vince is a great guy, and he's a great guy to have around that young locker room. So I think you can still, you know, your legacy can be partially that you sort of fostered the game and I guess kind of passed it on to the next generation and took your time to do that right. I'll always remember him. You know, we've had a lot of dunk discussions. It seems like around every dunk contest, we get to ask guys, current dunkers, what maybe was the greatest dunk of all time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them say that dunk over the Frenchman by Vince in the Olympics.
Oh, yeah. Frederick Weiss.
Yeah.
Sure.
And so.
Now, hold on. Can I bring this up? So This is going to date me, but I was in college at the time of that, and we didn't have internet in the dorms, you know, so
Twitter went nuts.
I went to the library, and I had to check in at the library, and I must have sat there for a half hour. You know, somehow I searched whatever, and I found this dunk, and it was in this tiny little box screen. It was all pixelated. I watched that over and over. I spent literally the entire half hour that I had that computer watching that dunk from all the different angles, and KG was on the floor. And remember, after Vince did it, KG just popped him right in the chest and was screaming, and Vince's leg was shaking and everything. Like, that was, I mean, as impactful a dunk that I've ever seen, watching it in this tiny little, like, 3x5 pixelated screen.
And I think it had the same impact for a lot of these NBA players that are around, even these young guys who participated in these last few, to hear them talk about it and just kind of the ripple effect of it. And I think, you know, Vince is not just a dunker. I think we all would agree on that. But that just has to be part of his legacy. And he was a creative dunker, really a scorer, too, when you think of some of those guys. The volume scorers in those days, for me, it's a little bit of still what if, like what could have been, sort of with some of his bad luck in the playoffs and things like that. Maybe the surrounding cast wasn't what it needed to be in some of those Toronto years, but I still think that there's nothing for him to be ashamed of in terms of when he finally does decide to step away. He had quite the impact for whatever team he ended up being on for however long he sticks around.
I think evolution would be the word that I would use to describe his legacy, because, you know, he came in, he was an incredible dunker, an incredible athlete, and we've seen a lot of those guys come and go. You know, I think back to Harold Miner. He was Baby Jordan and won that slam dunk contest, and we never saw him again for the Miami Heat, really, in terms of being an impact player. And, you know, Vince came in, and maybe he wasn't the, you know, go-to guy that everyone wanted him to be. Maybe he wouldn't become, you know, that Michael Jordan-type player that everyone wanted him to be, you know, seeing the similarities of the high flying and coming out of North Carolina and all those things. But, you know, he found a way to stick around, and he found a way to evolve his game. And, hey, that athleticism wasn't always going to be there, but can you develop a three-point shot? Can you play the four in a small ball lineup? Can you be open to doing those things? And, you know, I feel like that, to me, is what's most impressive about him. And as far as my memories, obviously the Frederick Weiss dunk is right up there, the 2000 slam dunk contest, when, you know, he really just, I mean, blew everybody out of the water with how good and creative his dunks were. But sitting with Zach LaVine, when we did this a few years ago and went through and watched some of the best dunk contests, and, you know, hearing Zach kind of break down some of Vince's dunks and just seeing the look on Zach's face as he watched those dunks. And then we were lucky enough that I believe Vince was in Memphis and they came through and we were able to grab him after shoot around. And he talked about, you know, what goes into a dunk contest, the showmanship in addition to, you know, actually completing your dunks. And he talked about some of Zach's dunks, and he talked about, you know, what he expected out of Zach. And it was just a really fun conversation and thoughtful conversation. And I think that goes to, you know, who Vince is in terms of you talked about it, giving back to the game. And then, you know, just being a chameleon and realizing that, hey, if you want to stick around, you've got to change your game. The game is changing, and maybe you don't have the things that you had when you were younger. And, you know, I give him a lot of credit for the evolution of his game to continue to play this late into his career. We'll wrap things up real quick with topic number three and the Denver Nuggets. You mentioned it earlier, in the midst of a 7-game, 15-day road trip, absolutely brutal timing as they try to make a final push for the playoffs, on the outside looking in at the taping of this podcast. Now, including Denver's franchise ABA days, all 28 previous Nuggets team to finish 500 or better made the playoffs, and that streak is in jeopardy. In fact, there's a chance we could see two teams, the Clippers and the Nuggets, Cal, end up on the outside looking in terms of the playoff picture, while still finishing with a 500 record. Denver is 38-33 right now, the Clippers 37-33. So I guess the question is, does Denver end up 500 and find themselves on the outside looking in?
I think either of these teams, the Nuggets or Clippers, if they are 500 or better, they will have earned it, because I'm just looking at it here. Denver has 10 games left. All 10 are against teams either in the playoff picture or they'll see the Clippers as well, a team still battling for a playoff spot. Their only four home games remaining are Milwaukee, Indiana, Minnesota, and Portland. And then when you look at L.A., they have 12 games left, 10 of those 12, same deal, teams either in the playoff picture or competing. So if they do finish 500, they will have earned it. But, of course, the only prize they earn is the fact that maybe they're on the outside looking in regardless.
And I give them both a lot of credit for battling through injuries. I mean, we had the number on the pregame show, 32 different starting lineups in 70 games for the L.A. Clippers. And Denver, of course, dealing with the injury to Paul Millsap, their big free agent acquisition, and yet an opportunity for both those teams to finish up 500. It's kind of funny how quickly things changed. Last week on this podcast, we were both talking about the possibility of San Antonio ending up on the outside looking in terms of the playoff picture. Now the Spurs are up to sixth place, and it's been Denver and the Clippers who have struggled. Clippers with four straight losses and Denver with two. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Wolvescast Audio on Demand. For Cal Soderquist, I'm John Fokey saying so long. We'll talk to you again next week right here on the Timberwolves Radio Network.